This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Oh, man, conference expansion conversation. It's always good. That'll show up in the wall of sound. I know that. And Tony D'Angelo will join us in about 15 minutes. Philadelphia Flyers defenseman, Tony D'Angelo. It bugs me to say that out loud. I was really hoping that the Hurricanes would figure out a way to get D'Angelo back. Did not work out. Doesn't seem like the money was that outrageous to me. But the Hurricanes, and this is, you can be happy about this or not, but in a salary cap game, and that's what the NHL is, and it is really a hard cap, unlike the NBA, unlike the NFL. In the NHL, you have to get really creative to exceed the salary cap. Hurricanes did, by the way, last year. It's otherwise difficult to fit guys in if they make $1 million to $1.5 million a year more than you are willing to pay them, than you have budgeted for them. It's really hard because at some point, that's a player. And that's really what it is to Carolina. If they decided that D'Angelo was worth, you know, we'll just say $4 million, mm-hmm. and he gets $5 million, that $1 million is a player. Kind of hard to just go with one less player.
Yeah.
So, but that was their decision. I would have brought D'Angelo back even at $5 million for 2 years. I thought he played well enough with Jacob Slavin to just run that back a couple more years. I've said this. By the way, there's a new podcast out. Did I mention that, Dennis?
I don't think you have.
There is a brand new podcast that landed this morning. And, you know, we talk about the Hurricanes having a 2 year window to win a Stanley Cup before Aho and Teravainen and Pesci and Jarvis, maybe Shea or Slavin, who has 3 years left in a deal, but he's eligible for an extension after two more years. All those guys are going to get raises, which probably means that there are going to be people not here because you can't pay everybody. And so I think there's a two-year window to win a Stanley Cup. D'Angelo for 2 years, I think he helps you win a Stanley Cup. He helps put you in that position. I think he did this year. Didn't go well at the end, though, right? Last, you know, 14, 15 games of the regular season, he was good against Boston, not good against the Rangers in the playoffs. So the end of the season, I think, kind of maybe soured the appetite to pay him $5 million a year. All right, but we'll get to that with Tony D'Angelo in just a minute. Now we have time for Wall of Sound.
The Wall of Sound is a function of this studio. There's no doubt about it.
All right, let's try to get through as much as we can here, Dennis, because some of it's really quite interesting. Actually, all of it is quite interesting. Why would I downplay any of this? Let's get to Baker Mayfield and the Carolina Panthers, shall we?
Let's do it.
Keyshawn Johnson is not a fan of Baker Mayfield.
I don't think he's going into the season as a starting quarterback. I know everybody thinks that based on his tenure at Cleveland and Carolina Panthers trade for him. So automatically people think, okay, he's a better quarterback than struggling Sam Darnold in the second half of the season last year. Baker Mayfield injured. If he was healthy, maybe Cleveland Browns look a little bit different. He's not on the move to Carolina, but I don't think that he starts the season. I think Sam Darnold holds him off. And if McCaffrey stays healthy, it's a different team.
Well, yes, that would go for either quarterback. It does pretty much all hinge on the health of Christian McCaffrey, who's played, I think, 10 games total over the last 2 years. 3 2 years ago, 7 last year. Yeah, their offense is predicated on him being in the lineup. Mayfield's better than Darnold. If Baker Mayfield can't beat Sam Darnold out, man, what are we doing? I mean, really, seriously. That sounds pretty basic, but what is Baker Mayfield doing if he can't beat out Sam Darnold? I mean, Darnold's had some injury issues. He had injury issues last year.
Yeah.
But when both guys, their normal performance, Mayfield's better.
Mm-hmm.
Just easily better. Now maybe the Darnold highs are better. Not even sure that's true, but if Baker Mayfield can't beat Sam Darnold out. I mean,
if that's the case, yeah, it's a long season.
I mean,
long season ahead. Bless, it might be either way, but still, it
right. Like I've been saying, I just don't think it really moves the needle for the Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, he's the shiny new object. All right, more on football, college style. We have two things. Actually, both ESPN people, Reese Davis on attractive ACC schools.
Ultimately, I think the ACC is still vulnerable. Doesn't mean that they can't make it, but at the moment, the brands that would really bring value to the other big conferences, the Big Two, which is where we're headed, it seems, are few and far between. But there are a few. If those brands, and I use that word because that's what they are now, as
yep.
You know, North Carolina, Clemson football. Those are the two primary ones in my judgment. There are others, but those are the two that I think are most attractive and would bring some value. Should they try to test it, should they try to go, then the ACC will have a hard time standing up.
Sure. Grant of Rights, though, says that only Notre Dame can probably make a move. If Grant of Rights, though, is ironclad enough, I'm not even sure Notre Dame would do that. Somebody will test it in court, I'm sure. I'm not going to use the term the wild, wild west that athletic directors have used with name, image, and likeness, but we really don't know what the future is in major college sports, because there is so much uncertainty. But if Grant of Rights holds, then the ACC is more than fine. All right, here's Harry Douglas, former NFL wide receiver. He's actually one of the guys that was hosting when I went on ESPN Radio last week.
Yeah.
So
we had those audio.
Harry and I, really?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
We played them.
Harry and I we're down. Anyway, here's Douglas. On change in college sports.
Change is not always bad, and I understand some sports may take a hit, but let's not forget, football fuels all those other sports as well. But change is sometimes needed because you don't want to get left behind, not evolving with time.
Well, first of all, Harry Douglas is correct. Sometimes change is good, and nobody wants to get left behind. It would be a stretch to argue that the Big Ten or the SEC was getting left behind before the additions of Texas, Oklahoma, Southern Cal, and UCLA. That would be a stretch to say that they are getting left behind. Now, from a school perspective, Texas and Oklahoma, at best, were probably going to pull in between, you know, 35 and 45 million annually in the Big 12. Southern Cal and UCLA, that number might have even come down.
Mm-hmm.
Their media rights have been an absolute mess. The decision to basically just do their own network meant that they just weren't pulling in a lot of money from it. So there's, for those schools, they were definitely, they made out big time. Huge influx of cash. So getting left behind is not the same depending on, from which angle you look. But I find it hard to believe that this is good for college football. Overall good for college football. So we have some fans here who are fans of, let's just say, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
How many games you gonna win in a juiced up SEC?
South Carolina?
Yeah.
Lucky if you won six.
Very.
Yeah.
Well, no, but here's the thing. If we end up with two solar systems, as Jack Swarbrick said, where we have one league with these, each of these leagues has 20 teams, you're basically playing in-house.
Yeah.
There aren't that many. Somebody's got to lose.
Yeah.
That is the ultimate problem that you have here, is that essentially you'll be resigned to playing only yourselves, and the balance sheet is going to have the same amount of wins as losses.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of schools that are not going to be happy. It's going to be a lot of schools going 5-7 and going, man, we used to win 8 games. We used to win 9 games. Now we win 5? It's the inevitability of where we're headed. If we're going to two super conferences, and I'm not talking about 16 versus 16, I'm talking about 20 versus 20.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're headed. Not everybody can win. Which is why I have argued that if the Big Ten does expand to 20, and we might be a ways away from that, Stanford would be part of it for sure.
Yeah.
And if ACC schools ever did get poached, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, I think Duke's very much in play. Because, well, they're used to losing. No offense, I'm not trying to be flippant about it, but they're accustomed to losing.
Yeah.
And there is a value to Duke as a national program in basketball.
Last week, I brought this up with Hayes last week, actually on Friday, and in the mention. So I posted on YouTube on 99.9 The Fan's YouTube page when Brian Geisinger was in with him last week talking about potential schools of the ACC that could eventually potentially maybe move. And I put up on YouTube and someone actually commented, don't think for one second that that Fox as a network, since they control the Big Ten, isn't salivating at the thought of putting Duke versus Carolina on Fox Network with Gus Johnson calling the game.
Yeah, regardless of the announcer.
Yeah, but just that whole thing, like the spectacle, like Gus Johnson, this game's on Fox. Yeah, why wouldn't you bring both Duke and Carolina together? Like, that's got money written all over it.
I realize that this is only a football thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when football season ends, there is still 3 more, almost 4 more months of programming to fill. And it's basketball.
Yeah.
And Duke is the number one draw in the sport. So, and Carolina's in the top 5 of draws in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not saying you make the move because of that, but it's a national program. Basketball less valuable than football, but Duke has a national brand. All right.
But it does matter.
Oh, it absolutely matters. It
definitely matters.
Absolutely. All right. A couple more very quick things. We haven't talked about Summer League at all. But you have a wager with Jordan, Paulo Banchero and Chet Holmgren.
I do.
Right? Which I'm interested in. Paulo Banchero is going to be a problem in the NBA. He is going. So will Chet Holmgren, by the way. Here's Jordan Cornette on the former Duke power forward.
Paulo's definitely impressed everybody because, as I do give that caveat of, look, some of the talent here isn't necessarily NBA primetime talent, you can still watch a young man play and say, that translates against whomever you're playing at any level. And when you watch Paulo play, the NBA body, and I'm hearing this a lot about some of these Duke guys, the same about like a Wendell Moore, it's the feel. These are high IQ guys, and Paulo is definitely at the top of that list. He's making passes cross-court with the offhand. He's playing off the ball. He's competing. He's rebounding. He's getting to his spots on the floor. He's doing all the things he was billed as having the ability to do.
He's good. He is good. Yeah. So is Chet Holmgren. Again, the fear about Holmgren is, will his body break? I mean, that should be a real fear for Oklahoma City. Will his body hold up to the pounding of an NBA season? Paulo Banchero is built for it. My question about Banchero, is he quick enough? And we won't know until we get into the actual season. But in terms of skill, yeah, Banchero's loaded with skill. All right, one more thing, and Dennis, you wanted to put this up. Kenny Mayne, who's been on this program before, former ESPN anchor star, was on with Boomer and Geo on CBS Radio, and he had something to take care of.
I definitely was looking for more, and this is a really fun thing to do.
Hey, where are you living these days?
I'm going to order coffee now. Same thing as yesterday, I'm on the radio. Oh, wait, you're not the same girl. Four shots, a little, not a lot of hot water. Like a strong Americano, had we not spoken. All right.
What size?
12 ounce.
In the middle of a radio interview.
Hey, that's fine.
Just order at Starbucks.
That is fine. I got no problem with it. I got no problem with it. What was that order? Four shots?
Yeah, let's
an Americano with a little hot water?
A little, not a lot of hot water. Okay. Like a strong Americano, had we not spoken. All right.
What size?
12 ounce.
12 ounce. So that would be a small.
Yeah. Or tall, whatever they call it.
Well, it depends. Was he at Starbucks or was he at someplace else?
I think it was Starbucks.
Okay. I mean, you might be able to get an Americano in other places. But then he would have just called, ordered a tall. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Adam Gold in studio with my friend Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, how does longevity risk figure into our retirement and income plan?
This is the best of times and the worst of times, Adam. The longevity risk means we're going to live too long. But to me, every day I live is not too long.
Right, absolutely.
Good. So we want our money to outlive us. And unfortunately, many people I've seen, you out there listening, maybe one of them, your money is not designed to outlive you. You might outlive your money, and that's not what we want to have happen. Because when we get to that day after you run out of money, it's not going to be a fun time. So let's design a plan that guarantees you'll never run out of money. We call it the GPI plan, Growth Protection Lifetime Income. For the next 10 people, this is a golden ticket, Adam. $1,000 value, we're going to do it at no cost or obligation.
And all you have to do is call. We make it so easy. Would you like financial independence into your retirement and beyond it? 800-661-7383. That golden ticket is a $1,000 value, or you could text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. Tony D'Angelo, now of the Philadelphia Flyers, joins us on the Adam Gold Show. I'm sad to say that, but I'm going to start with something that isn't hockey related. Your Phillies are now in a playoff position.
Yeah, we made a major turn since we last talked. It was having me fire Girardi after the season, but honestly, they're missing Harper, missing Segura, Suarez, Eflin. They could stick around and get those four back. We might have some playoff baseball in Philly this year.
It's about time, right? I mean, the Phillies have been kind of building and pretending. I shouldn't say pretending, but trying to be a contender for the last few years. It hasn't necessarily worked out. But yeah, overcoming injuries. The Mets have played basically the entire first half without Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom. The Braves didn't have Ronald Acuna for the first six or so weeks of the season. We could have some kind of battle the last 2.5 months of the year.
If the Mets get Scherzer and DeGrom back, though, that's almost an impossible series to win when you play them. Between the bats they got, and then you go 1-2, and then I'm guessing, in a sense, you can go 4-5, really, if they do it right in between rest or in a 7-game series. They're definitely going to go 5-6. It's tough seeing them twice in a series. So hopefully somehow we can get somebody to knock the Mets out before we have to play them.
Tony D'Angelo is joining us here. All right, do you want to get into the negotiations at all? Or I'll just, you know, you and I have not really spoken about this, so I'll let you decide what you want to say about why you're with the Philadelphia Flyers right now.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say really is that I was disappointed with the negotiations, in a sense. I mean, if you look at the contract I've obviously now signed after being traded, to me it was a very attainable contract for the team, mm-hmm. You know, with the cap situation that Carolina was in. And but I also respect everybody's decisions, right? You know, it's a business, and not everything is going to be the exact way I feel about it or the way my agent felt about it, whatever, as what we deserved. And I think that all I know is that I put everything I had on the line for the team, every single game I played in, and I put the team first. And I really just enjoyed playing for Rod. I've spoken so highly of Rod, and mm-hmm. I'll continue to do so the rest of my career. And, he's just a fantastic coach. He was a perfect coach for me, you know, and like not going too far into detail, there was, you know, stuff that I was willing to do to continue to play for him, you know, to make it work. But, when you get too far apart in certain negotiations, then, and for myself, having the opportunity to be a Flyer, which was a lifelong dream, it's kind of hard to pass up at that point. And, in the team's perspective and just the way it went out. But
I just love the people in Raleigh. So it makes it tough pill to swallow, because I was only there for a year, but it felt like I was so comfortable around the group and the people. And I had so much support from the fans. It was like I was there for like 10 years. It felt like, you know, when I'm leaving. And so it was, you know, it's a bittersweet thing. Obviously being a Flyer is just, it's something I can't really explain. It means so much, but you know, I really enjoyed being a Cane. The fans were great. And now watching the support from the fans flooded in after I left and comment and disappointment and stuff, it means a lot to me. And, you know, I won't forget them anytime soon.
Tony D'Angelo is joining us here. Like, I made a list of like six or seven things I wanted to, you know, just touch on with you. You mentioned basically all of them, so I'm going to go back to it. How much were you involved in the discussions? Did Rod play a role trying to mediate this whole thing? Or was it simply your agent and I'll just say Tom Dundon?
Everybody was involved. And everybody was definitely involved, including myself. You know, I had such a great respect for Rod and enjoyed playing for him so much, because I just think that he is he's what every coach, you know, is. Not that every coach has a different personality. I don't want to say that, kind of make me sound a little bit right. Wrong there. But just what a coach, you know, is, the respect of coach, I should say. That's the way I'll put it. And that's how you draw the respect of players, the way he did. And something for me that it was just so impressive to me. And you know, I had a great year, and I attribute a lot of it to him. And, you know, I give myself a lot of credit for it, but you have to give credit to the coach for believing in you and my D partner and the players I was with. You know, there's a lot that went into it. It's, you know, you need support. It's a team game. And I had that support there, and I really appreciated it. And so I was definitely involved. I wasn't just going to sit back and let other people make my decisions for me. I was involved. I was also, you know, feel like I know my value in the league. And I think that other teams, you know, respected that and knew that my value was what it was. And, you know, in a sense, Carolina just wasn't valuing it at that point. You know, and that's really all there is to it. I kind of don't want it to be like I'm just running, because, you know, going team to team is not what any player wants to do. You know, when the opportunity of Philadelphia Flyer presents itself from a kid from Philadelphia, it's a little bit different in a sense. You know, that starts to come at you a little bit more if you're going to leave. You know, then it makes a lot of sense if you're not, you know, if you're going to leave and move on. But you know, I had a lot of respect for the Canes organization, and just unfortunately wasn't valued at the number that made sense.
Tony D'Angelo is with us here in the Adam Gold Show. So I wanted to ask you if you had thought about it. I'm sure you did as a kid growing up. And like, you and I are both from New Jersey, but we're really from two different parts, two different states. I'm from Northern Jersey, which is really New York. You're from Southern Jersey, which is really Philadelphia. So you grew up a Flyer fan. Have you thought about what it's going to be like to skate out onto the ice as a Flyer at the start of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to even think about still. I know it's 3-4 days in now to being traded. But when I was a kid, you know, for the people that know me and I grew up with and my parents, I used to be in the basement playing. You know, we had a little, like, not like a roller rink, but I had a spot that I could rollerblade down the basement a little bit. And I'd be announcing as if I was on the Flyers scoring goals. Up, my parents always tell me about it. You know, I remember it partially, but not all of it. But they – and I watched every single game. I tried to stay up late. They were on the West Coast swing, 10 o'clock games. I mean, you know, my parents would be getting in trouble with work school night, trying to tell me to go to bed. I would, you know, have the TV on mute to watch the Flyers. And I was just all Flyers. Every day I went to school, I had a Flyers t-shirt, a Flyers hat, whatever it was. I was, you know, it was my lifelong dream. My whole goal, my whole life was to be a Flyer. And obviously when you get older, you realize that it's a business. And, you know, you can go place to place. You can't control where you're going to go until you're a free agent or whatever. But to now actually be a Flyer, and, you know, I'm just starting to envision, you know, we play October 13th. It's a home opener, and putting that jersey over and, you know, coming out on the home ice in front of my family and stuff like that. It's going to be pretty surreal. It's going to be probably right up there, if not higher, than when I played my first career game. So it's something that you don't really, not many people get to do, right? Everybody has a favorite team growing up, but not everybody gets to fulfill a lifelong dream and play for that team when you go through a career. So for me to be able to do it, it's something special, and I'm going to try to take advantage of every minute of it.
Tony D'Angelo is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. All right, so you played pretty much all year with Jacob Slavin. What was that like as an eye-opener for you, going from somebody who played, not necessarily against, because defensemen don't play against other defensemen, but watching him and then playing with him?
Yeah, I've told many people already, just in interviews or in private conversations, I said there's no other Jacob Slavin, you know, in a sense, when you think of the perfect match that we were for each other, the way it turned out to be. It's just a total compliment. You know, we just complimented each other's games perfectly, I thought, you know, and it was like right from the start, I felt like there was no, you know, there was no grace period there where we were getting used to each other. It seemed like we started playing together. It was just good. You know, we didn't have to have many conversations where we were talking about doing this or that. It was just, we both knew each other's game, understood each other's game, and we, you know, worked off each other so well. But just a great player. I mean, he's a great person, as you guys know, but hockey-wise, I'll talk about more. It's just a phenomenal player, and I actually told the Flyers general manager I was speaking to him, I said, you know, the crazy thing about him, I said, we played a lot of man-to-man, right? You know, as everybody knows, we're an aggressive team. And I said, it doesn't matter who was on him. He could defend anybody one-on-one. And I said, that's tough. You know, you get guys like McKinnon and McDavid, they're spinning, they're turning all over the place. And he's able to just swallow them up. You know, I remember the one shift we played Boston, and I'm pretty sure it was game seven. Marchand was having a dynamite series. He just swallowed him up one shift in the D zone, and it was a big time of the game. You know, Boston was starting to put on a little pressure there, trying to get back in the game. We were up, you know, 2-0, and he just swallowed a play. And it's not going to be a play that everybody sits there and talks about, because it's not a highlight reel play, right? But he just turns him up the wall, he's cutting and turning, and boom, swallow him, breaks the puck out perfect, and we're going the other way, and there goes the shift for Boston's top line. It's like little things like that, but they happened 10, 15 times a game, right? So, you know, it's not like it happened once. Oh, wow, look at that, you know, look at that play. These are things that happen all year. And when you play with a guy like that, you know, it makes life on me easier. And I think that I might have made life on him a little easier sometimes, not having to defend because we were so good with the puck. But, you know, it's a pleasure to play with him. He's a great guy, too. And he was one of the first guys to text me, obviously, as soon as this happened, you know, disappointed. And, you know, all the guys were disappointed, which meant a lot to me. But, you know, we went back and forth to talk, and we said that, you know, just the way it turns out, it's business. I won't be the last guy it ever happens to. And I should hopefully, if anybody else leaves, I hope you guys come to Philadelphia with me. So,
well, you can't.
Kind of the way them combos
well,
go.
You might be able to lobby for Jacob Slavin to come to Philadelphia, but I don't think anybody else.
No, I don't think I'm ever going to get into Philadelphia, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think
he's a lifer.
I 100% agree. Give me another player that surprised you with how good he was. Before I ask you one more question.
Yeah, so I didn't know Brett Pesce overly well. I know him, but I didn't know him too well. You know, I know how good Brady is. I know how good Troch is and stuff like that. And, you know, because I know them guys coming in. But watching Brett Pesce play on a nightly basis is, tell you what, he's worth a lot more than $4 million when you get paid. And he is just so strong at all sides of the ice. His offense is, you know, you look at the point totals, he doesn't really play power play, so there goes 10 points right off, you know, the top right there, in a sense. He's really good all over the ice. He's got a high hockey IQ level. He defends great, skates well. I mean, the gaps, he doesn't let guys into his own zone. And just watch him, every play is, like, just smart. And if you're sitting on the bench as a player, you know, I sometimes go crazy in depth with all this stuff. But if you're sitting on the bench as a player, we see stuff, right? So if Tesh has the puck on the stick, we see what's open. Now, it's way harder when you're on the ice to see what's open. But it just seemed like every time I don't shut up, and you hear me from the bench, and it seems like every time I was getting ready to open my mouth and say something to give him help, it was already done. And then my next thing was nice play, pressure, whatever, you know, whatever that may be. But he's just a really, really, really good two-way defenseman. I think one of the top in the league that doesn't get the recognition of, you know, Slavo gets great recognition, but in my opinion, deserves even more. And I think Pesce deserves way more recognition than he gets on being one of the top two-way guys in the league, because his offense is real good too, and he gets pucks in net and makes good breakout passes. He's just a great player and is going to have a long, long career still doing this.
Yeah, look, I think you're right. He's worth a lot more than 4.05 or whatever it is that he gets, and he's part of this two-year window for the Hurricanes. There's a lot of contracts up. Coming up in 2 years. All right, final thing. What are your summer plans, man? You're going to get to First Citizens a bunch and watch your Phillies, or, you know, how do you prepare for the season, all of that?
Yeah, hold up. Just to touch on one other thing, I'll be recruiting heavy in 2 years, just so you know.
Okay.
But anyway, besides that, yeah, my summer plans, I mean, I'm here anyway, so now being able to be on the Flyers is perfect for me, because I'll train at the facility, skate at the facility the whole summer, you know, every morning, and then I'm back and forth from down the Jersey Shore, because that's where I live most of the time. But
once the Phillies get home here, we got a series with the Cubs, and I'm going to try to get over there. I'm going to try to get to some of the Eagles camps, and so I'm right across the street from where the Eagles practice.
Right.
So I hear the whistles every morning, but I'll try to get over there, and it's actually be pretty cool now since I'm part of being one of the Philly athletes. I'll be able to get into, you know, meet the players. I'm a diehard Phillies fan and Eagles fan and Sixers, so now to be able to get to go meet them guys and kind of hang around their clubhouses and locker rooms, whatever, is going to be really cool for me. So I'm going to try to take advantage of some of that stuff. And then just the rest of the summer, get ready to go train, skate, and it's an important year for the Flyers. I know the Canes fans listen to this don't really care about that, but it's an important year coming up for us here. We got 2 years in a row without making the playoffs, and that's not the standard in Philly. So it's going to be let's get it going right away. Let's bring some Flyers hockey back to the table and try to have a good year.
There's no question about it, and I hope that you'll be a big part of it. Tony, I appreciate your time, man. It was great having you here. Look forward to seeing you soon when you guys come to town. Hopefully our paths will cross, and I'll be in touch.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Anytime you guys need me on, happy to come on, and I thank you very much.
It's just fun to talk to. Just absolutely fun to talk to Tony D'Angelo. So I wish him well. Miss him. The Hurricanes, I think, are going to miss Tony D'Angelo.
I have a question for you regarding, again, the cap situation with the team, maybe the reason why they weren't able to agree to terms. I know Jake Gardner did not play last year.
Right.
Now, for everyone who complained a couple years ago how the Tampa Bay Lightning used long-term IR to work around the salary cap, well, Carolina did that this year by putting Jake Gardner on long-term IR because he has over $4 million cap hit.
Yeah, $4.1 million.
Something along those lines. Now, the team announced that he is healthy after the season ended. So I don't think they could put him back on long-term IR unless he actually does get injured again. Otherwise, you're looking at a player grievance from the NHLPA.
They could call Tanya Harding's friends.
Gosh.
And kneecap him.
Jeez. No comment. I'm wondering, because that is going to count against their team's cap unless they move him in some way this offseason, which my guess is, hey, team, whomever, here's the second round draft pick that the Flyers just gave us. Please take Jake Gardner and give us a bag of apples in return.
Right. I actually wrote about this in my kind of, it wasn't really a draft recap because I really talked more about D'Angelo, and I mentioned it last night. I don't think Jake Gardner's going to play for the Hurricanes anymore.
I don't think so either, but that contract does matter right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, it counts $4.1 million against the cap unless they move it. Mm-hmm. Now, can you find somebody to take Jake Gardner, a team that has cap room? Because there's a floor. You have to spend a certain amount of money. So are there teams below that who, hey, we'll do you a solid, you do us a solid. Mm-hmm. The Hurricanes, they weren't in this position, but they bought a first-round pick from Toronto
with
Patrick Marleau's contract. They just waived him, or they just, you know.
They bought him out.
Yeah. They just paid him his $6 million and let him walk. Mm-hmm. So they paid $6 million for a first-round pick. You could see a team do that with Jake Gardner. And if the Hurricanes can't find a team willing to do that, like you give a team Gardner and a second-round pick in return for a fifth.
Yeah.
There's your deal. And now you're rid of the $4.1 million. Or you could buy him out. And the buyout is $1 million this year and like $1.4 and change next year. Mm-hmm. So that's easy to take $3 million off your salary cap for this year.
Sure.
So they can get rid of Jake Gardner's contract, most of it simply with the stroke of a pen and a check, which, I mean, the team doesn't like to do and has not done under Tom Dundon.
The last time they did it was basically Alex Semin.
That was the last buyout. Mm-hmm. Well, no. I mean, they did it with
Marleau.
Patrick Marleau.
Yeah.
But yes, the last time they took a long-term contract and bought it out was Semin. So could they do it? Yeah. I think they'll get rid of the contract. I don't think Jake Gardner's contract, other than in a buyout form, will be with the Carolina Hurricanes this year, which this is why when I keep saying it's between 22 and $23 million of cap space to get 8 players. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting to see how that happens. Free agency begins Wednesday.
Yeah, noon.
Wednesday at noon, yes. So
you'll have some breaking news during the show. Well, actually, I don't know. You're here on Wednesday.
I am here. That's right. No, nothing will happen.
Well, Thursday, you're not here, sir.
Oh, huge.
So
Hurricanes will sign everybody.
Exactly. Big signings on Thursday.
Everybody will be signed on Thursday.
Calling it.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
I know I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Thanks to Hayes Permar for sitting in all last week. He'll be here on Thursday of this week as well.
So expect all the free agent signings.
Everything
to happen for the
everything will happen on Thursday.
They're all going to happen.
The Atlantic Coast Conference will expand to include the Big Ten. On Thursday.
Oh, okay.
That's what's going to happen when I am not here. Real quick, I mentioned that we would have some breaking news. Actually, this happened earlier in the day, but I had not seen it reported. So let's do this. Apparently, the Department of Justice,
the DOJ.
Department of Justice, is opening an investigation into an antitrust investigation into the PGA Tour and how they have reacted to their members leaving for LIV Golf. So for those people who are LIV Golf supporters, if you will, you have that bit of, I'll just say for you, good news. I do believe that the PGA Tour is smart enough to not violate the law. Now, whether or not they can ban players from coming back and playing on the PGA Tour, that may be a matter that will be settled in the courts.
Interesting.
I mean, you'll always be able to challenge anything in a court. Whether or not it has merit, I don't know. But the PGA Tour has a certain set of rules, and the rules state that in order for you to play on a competing tour or in a competing tour's event, you have to get permission. You first must ask permission from the league, and if the league declines that permission, typically they have not, but if the league declines that permission or the tour declines it, and you still go ahead and do it, you're in violation of the rules, and they have every right to mete out some discipline. Mm-hmm. In the past, any discipline has been completely anonymous. They have not released any. Like, there have been situations where players have been suspended for an extended period of time, but it was never announced by the PGA Tour, so nobody knew it. No, but nobody's been suspended. Like, there's no league in the world that hasn't suspended a player for one thing or another, whether it's a drug violation or actually, I think Robert Garrigus was probably suspended for using marijuana. But like, no league has not suspended a player. It's just inevitable. And I'm not disparaging anybody. The PGA Tour has simply never made those findings public. In this case, they did. They needed a show of strength. But I actually think that they're within their rights to deny access back to the PGA Tour if those players decided to go play another tour. No other league would allow you to play in some other league and their league. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, look, I could be looking at this from one perspective, and it could be the wrong one. We'll find out. As the courts play out over time. But so that's something that happened today. Department of Justice has launched an investigation. We'll see where it goes.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Off of the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.